friends. It's me, Bethany Rutta, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It's me, Alan Slater.
We are What Page Are You On? And this will actually be our last episode of the year.
Boo.
Yeah, we'd said in the previous episode that there'd be one more and then it would be our roundup of the year. But we looked at the numbers and realised that if we did it like that, our books of the year would come out on Christmas Eve, which we just thought was not the one.
No one wants that.
Nobody wants that. And also, we hope that maybe you will feel inspired by some stuff that we talk about and maybe want to buy them as presents for yourself or for someone else if you celebrate Christmas. So, should we kick it off?
Well, before we kick
it off... Oh my god, yes!
We have some news!
We have some great news. Alice, would you like to impart the news?
Yeah, so I had a bottle of Prosecco and I was going to pop the cork to be like, woo! I thought it'd be like a nice sound bit, but we drank it last night.
Okay, so the Prosecco is gone. The news is...
We are podcast of the week with metro.co.uk.
Yeah, how cool is that? What a nice way to finish up another year of podcasting.
There's a little link on our Instagram feed at WhatPagePod. It's in our bio, so you can click and read an interview with Bethany.
Over pizza at Zia Lucia, the best pizza place in the world. With lovely Emma from the Metro, who wanted to talk to us about the pod.
Yeah, thank you so much for featuring us, Emma.
It was really nice.
What an honour.
I felt like we expressed the essence of the pod in quite, you know, a brief thing.
So if you're here because of that, hi.
Nice to meet you, in a way. So the purpose of this episode is to impart to you our personal top 10 books of the year. Because with that episode last year was a gift that kept on giving. And yeah, people really liked it and it continued to be listened to throughout even this year. So that was very interesting to me. At least we know it's useful to people.
We thought we'll give the people what they want.
Give the people what they want.
Lists.
Yeah, it feels like we're living in an anti-list moment, and yet people want lists. I love a list.
I fucking love them. I make them all the time.
Me too. I'm like the guy from High Fidelity in every single way.
Same. Every single imaginable way.
So the way that we've done it is that we've both put together, without cross-referencing, our personal top tens of the year. We won't do them in any particular order other than to say our favourite book of the year and then the other nine, not in order of preference. Alice's in alphabetical order. Mine are in alphabetical order
because you can take the girl out of the bookshop.
Indeed. Alice, would you like to tell us what your favourite book of 2018 is?
My book of 2018 is a book that I read in a day. I was given a proof. I bought the hardback as soon as it came out because I knew I'd be reading it again and again. It's one that I feel good feelings and bad feelings when I look at it because it broke my heart and mended me and gave me life. And my book of the year is Women by Chloe Caldwell.
Very deserving.
We discussed it in the February... Different Kinds of Love episode. So if you want to hear more about my thoughts on women and Bert's thoughts too, you can listen to it on there.
Do you know what? As I was writing, we had a little bit of a kind of discussion before we recorded this about, you know, whether we were doing a top five and then a podcast top five and then a personal, you know, how we were going to present our list, whether we were having a five or a ten, blah, blah, blah. And I said in that discussion that Women was in my list and then I removed it. But then as I was writing down my top ten, I kicked something off in favour of Women. It's gone. That will never be heard of again.
Disgusting.
I know. So it really made me think about how much I had enjoyed it, how good I thought it was. I'm happy to advocate for this as well. So that's also one of my picks.
Good. What's your book of the year?
It will probably not come as a surprise to you, but my book of the year is Skin Deep by Liz Nugent.
So it's not a surprise to me, but it might be a surprise to our listeners. Discussed it before.
So I was thinking about Skin Deep by Liz Nugent, and I think it's almost a bit like The Fact of a Body by Alexandria Marzano-Lesnovich, in that they are books that I loved so much, and I think many people have bought them on my personal recommendation, and they didn't bang as hard as I feel they should have done.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my book of the year last year, and this is my book of the year this year. I love it, man. I love it. I just think it's amazing.
It's a thriller, but it just operates on so many levels. She's so smart. Loved it. It is in my top 10. Is it?
I don't know. I don't know. I didn't write it down.
No, sorry, I booted it.
That's okay. But yeah, I feel like if you like the kind of books that we like on the pod, there is no way you won't like Skin Deep. It's so dark and gnarly, and you just have no idea where it's going, and that makes it a real pleasure to read. But it doesn't feel like it's trying to kind of outfox you or be really kind of smart in a kind of plot or structure way.
No, it's just really compelling. Like, it opens with a cocktail party and a clearly unreliable main character. And from there, it just gets grim and weird.
It's so real. It's like you're reading someone's biography. It's so weird how deep she goes into someone's mind and life.
Yeah, the main character is just so well realised.
Yeah, and I think that this is one of the big overlooked books of the year for me. Like, it was in a lot of people, when we asked people on Twitter, which we'll be mentioning a bit later, we asked people on Twitter for kind of books they'd enjoyed this year from the podcast Twitter account. A lot of people mentioned it, so I'm glad that, like, the people that we know have picked it up. But yeah, I want it to pop off. I want it to, like, bang really hard. I feel like it's banged really hard in Ireland, where she is from. But I just, yeah, I want it to pop off so hard everywhere in the world.
Well, hopefully, paperback.
Yeah. Gotta love a paperback.
Let's see it bang.
Yeah.
Because it is, I think, in terms of, because it's marketed very much as a thriller, and sometimes that can be the case with thrillers. Sometimes you get lucky and the hardback pops off, and sometimes they just don't because people don't necessarily value them in the same way. Yeah.
And also because this isn't a kind of easy to nutshell thriller the way, you know, it's not like Girl on the Train or something.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very complex, but so readable. So yeah, that is my book of the year. Alice, what is your next choice?
Okay, so mine are in alphabetical order. My number one on my list, in no order other than being alphabetical by title, is Convenience Store Woman by Sayaka Murata.
We love this book.
We talked about this last episode. Episode before last, rather. I just loved it. I really liked it. The narrator's voice is still in my head. And, I mean, I feel like I pick my books, my book of the year. I don't worry too much about creating a balanced list. Like, I'm not, like, Waterstones. No one really gives a shit. So I really go instinctively based on just which books have stayed with me, which books I still have an emotional response to when I see them on my shelf or see the title. And this book is just really unforgettable. I don't think the main character is going to be leaving me anytime soon.
Yeah, that's a good choice. That is a good choice.
Thank you, brother.
So the next one on my no particular order list was actually Normal People by Sally Rooney, which I think is a lot of people's book of the year. So we won't spend too long chatting about it.
Book of the year,
a lot of people, including this little boutique, this little independent bookseller called Waterstones. So yeah, I just feel like,
interestingly, obviously, Convenience Store Woman is Foyle's book of the year.
Make you
look
think.
At us, eh?
We're really swimming with the tide.
Normal People is obviously also on my list.
Yeah,
it bangs.
It's great. I loved it. I love Sally Rooney. I want her to succeed at all costs. I think she is a great egg. I just think she's a cool gal with an amazing talent who is also a very kind and thoughtful person who does great work. I love her.
Agreed. And I'm so pleased that she is the voice of a generation.
Yeah.
Fuck off Bret Easton Ellis.
So true.
What did he say this year? He said, like, no one is writing the great millennial novel. And I said at the time, fucking Sally Rooney is, man.
Bitch, it's Sally Rooney. Number three.
Well, my number two is Fire Sermon by Jamie Quattro.
It's your number three.
It's my number two.
No, it's not, because you've done...
Oh, I did, yeah.
What's wrong with you?
I don't know! I'm scared of Krampus.
Oh,
it's Krampus Eve.
On the moment of recording, it is Krampus Eve, and it's getting to Alice. She's all shook up.
I've heard my schnapps and I'm still concerned.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so Fire Sermon. We discussed this one as well, I believe, this year.
We did. I think it was the same episode.
As Women. But in case you've forgotten it, so Fire Sermon came out earlier in the year from Picador. I just absolutely loved it. It has very short, very sharp chapters. It's about a woman who has an absolutely wild affair. It's so beautifully, sharply written. I know that you love this book as well.
It's also, I've just crossed it out from my own personal list because I won't need to talk about it because we're going to talk about it now. So that would have been also on my top 10. I think it's wonderful. I think it appeals to everything I'm interested in. As we know, as we've discussed many times, I love books about people having affairs. I love any kind of secret relationship. But this one just has other shit to it, which namely is all the Christian stuff, which is so interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And she just writes so deliciously.
She does. And we were really lucky to hear her do a reading as well in London. And hearing her read it just completely reignited that fire I have for that book.
Yeah.
And do a reread of so many of these. Because I feel like...
A lot of these bangers came out very early in the year.
And we read them in 2016.
Yeah, it's true. 2017.
No, 2016. Because... No, 2017. No, you shut up.
I'm so sorry that you just have to take it for granted that I'm right. I'm sorry. It's just how it is.
Fuck.
So yeah, I love Fire Salmon. I loved hearing Jamie Quattro read from it. She's another great lady. She's a really interesting person. Mm-hmm. I really love her stuff, and I'm really excited to read her short stories, which are being published by Picador next year, which, yeah, maybe we'll take those on honeymoon, who knows, maybe I'll come to those next.
I'm so excited to read them.
Me too. There's no way they're not going to bang. So my third book on my list is House of Impossible Beauties by Joseph Cassara.
Ooh!
Yeah, which we talked about in what I think is one of our best episodes, actually, which was the one about the kind of New York club scene, in which we discussed House of Impossible Beauties, Disco Bloodbath, is that what it's called?
I think it's actually called Party Monster now.
Party Monster / Disco Bloodbath, and What I Loved by Siri Hustvedt. And it's about the kind of New York drag ball scenes. It really has stayed with me, and I've kind of read or seen other things since then, and I've always been like, oh yeah, like in House of Impossible Beauties. I just found the voices of the characters very memorable and compelling, and I found their stories very, I don't know, I loved it.
They're beautifully written.
It's really well written. I hope a lot of people have read it, because I think it's something that a lot of people in our demographic would get a lot out of.
It's one I'm pleased to see a few people tweeted us about as well.
Yeah.
That pleased me.
So is that One World? Yeah, didn't Tanmai send it to us?
Yes.
Yeah, so, I just feel like if she hadn't sent us that, maybe it would have slipped under my radar.
So, I had, the cover had caught my eye.
Yeah, that
the
was it.
The cover of Hardback is an extreme close-up of, a pair of long ass lashes and loads of glitter. Just, like, really close, like, little portrait of just a tiny section of someone's face. And it was just a beautiful cover. Obviously, I flipped it and read the back. I think I saw it in Daunts, flipped it and read the back and was like, ooh, this is definitely in my area of interest. And then Tamai very kindly sent it to us. But I do, again, I hope, I'm glad that it seemed to find a small audience. I have no idea how big of an audience it found, but it seems like people read it and were talking about it. I hope that the paperback would give it another big push as well.
Yeah, I love this book. I think it's one of those... I don't think this about every book I read, but it's something that I think would make a very good TV adaptation.
Ooh, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, I'm into it. I'm feeling it. Number four.
Is Give Me Your Hand by your new favourite author, Megan Abbott.
I'm so sad I haven't read it, because maybe it would be on my list too.
Oh, I'm so excited for you to read it. So I don't think we've discussed this one on the pod yet. We definitely haven't, because you haven't read it. No, I think maybe it came up in last year's...
things we're looking forward to.
Yeah, things we're looking forward to in 2018 list. I included it. I was correct too, because I read it and I loved it. Obviously, it's no secret that I just love everything that Megan Abbott has written. All of her books bang. This one is about lady scientists. So two women who were friends in high school. We know that there was like some beef. They haven't spoken in years. And then, lo and behold, she rocks up in her lab. And they're working together on a project. And everything all comes out. It's just brilliant. It's a thriller, it's about female friendship, and it has this like really cool science setting, which I just don't feel I really read many
it's
books
true.
In that world. Mainly because it doesn't, I wouldn't say it interests me very much.
And also
but
because
she can make anything.
Surely most
me.
Authors don't know shit about science.
Yeah.
I'm just gonna put that out there. So would not
apart
choose.
From like forensic science.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, this sounds like something I really want to read, and I'm sad I haven't got around to it this year.
I just liked it as well, because most of her books were about teenagers, and, you know, it was just something slightly different, even though there are these, like, scenes set, when they're younger, having like the slightly older main character, older Narita. I really enjoyed it.
Cool. I will definitely get around to it now that I love Megan Abbott. Who knew?
She's on side.
So my next one, I'm going to say, is Sabrina, the graphic novel.
Ooh.
By Nick Durnaso.
So this one we read for an episode that then never came to be.
Yeah, we never actually recorded it, but I'm really glad that I read this book for that episode. I think we just kind of mutually decided that we wouldn't... I don't know how to talk about graphic novels in a way that would fill an episode. That was one of my reasons for being like, maybe we shouldn't do this episode. But I loved Sabrina, and I'm so glad that I read it. I didn't know what it was about at all.
No, same. I had no idea.
And I think maybe it would... Probably people would enjoy it if they didn't know what it was about, but also might not. I think plot-wise...
See, this is the thing with the graphic novel episode. You do know how to write graphic novels because it's just talking about books. Yeah. But the problem with this one in particular is there is no way to talk about it without revealing a couple of really key things that you can't know when you start reading it. Like, I think, for example, Fun Home. We could easily discuss Fun Home.
Yeah, it's true. Hours.
But this one, I think there is something so intrinsic about it that we just can't really discuss.
Yeah. So I loved this book, and I thought visually it was so beautiful. Like, I loved looking at the illustrations. They don't look like other illustration, like other kind of graphic novel figures that I've seen. It's a really nice looking book. It's big and like bold colours. I just loved the look of it, and I loved the story, and it really kind of chimed with very modern concerns and like things that are weird and new about the horrible world that we live in. I think it's such an interesting book, and I was really glad that it was on the... Was it the book along list?
It was on the long list, yeah.
I think that was such a cool choice, because I think Same. It deserved it.
I wouldn't have read it otherwise.
Yeah.
Because graphic novels are very expensive. I do love them, and I read maybe 4 or 5 a year, but I personally just wouldn't have bought this in hardback. It wouldn't have been on my radar. So I was really grateful for the long list of it, just because otherwise I wouldn't have come to it, and I loved it.
Yeah, same. And like, it was the only new graphic novel I read this year.
I think I'm going to try and articulate something I like about it. You can cut this if you think it's a spoiler.
Okay, tell me.
But the other reason that I'm glad that I read it is that I think even if I'd known what it was about, I personally would not have thought that I would be interested in a book written about a man that's named after a woman who is hardly in it.
Yeah.
You know?
True, yeah.
Legit. I think straight away that doesn't sound like something I would enjoy, but I did.
It's great, and I'm really, really glad that, yeah, through a set of weird circumstances, I did end up reading it.
Okay, my next one, which I suspect is on your list too, is I'll Be Gone in the Dark by Michelle McNamara.
Yes, that is on my list.
We talked about this one with our friends from...
Foul Play Magazine.
Foul Play Magazine. For a book club episode, so we don't need to go deep into it, but you can listen to our thoughts over there. I just really enjoyed it. It really, really disturbed me. It's a true crime novel, if you're not familiar with it. It's a true crime book written by Michelle McNamara, A, before her tragic passing, but B, before the Golden State Killer was caught.
So that's what it's about. It's about this, like, decades-old... unsolved serial rape and murder cases that have partly due to the author Michelle McNamara been come to be called the Golden State Killer. It's just about all of the people that were involved in the case and all of the victims who I feel like you learn a lot about and you kind of know particularly well. Yeah, and I just think it is absolutely wild that not that long after it was published, the case was solved.
Like, within... It was a matter of weeks.
Yeah.
A matter of weeks. And it is an incredible book. She was an incredible writer, and she brings so much warmth and soul to something which is, you know, a subject matter which is so horrible.
Yeah.
And
so much research. Like, she really put in the hours.
She really cared, man. Like, she really cared. She wasn't just writing something to be titillating. It was a passion of hers, and he was caught.
Who knows what's going to happen next, but yeah. wild.
I mean, my reading experience was somewhat stressful because he was caught as I was reading it.
Yeah.
So I did not know, call me naive, I knew nothing about the Golden State Killer. I had no idea that he isn't caught.
Yeah.
That I didn't know that the book, you know, ends when his yeah. you know, identity is still a mystery. So, yeah, I was suddenly surrounded by the case that I was kind of privately involved in. Yeah. Suddenly it was, you know, all around me. So it was quite a lot just to have that going on all the time. But I'm glad I read it.
Yeah, I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. So in that case, I will move on to another true crime book I read and loved this year, which is Bad Blood by John Carreyrou, which was another one that cropped up in a few people when we asked for their favourite books this year. Many people mentioned this book, which is funny because it's a true crime book, but it's not a kind of, it's not a rape and murder true crime book, and it's not, it, on paper it just doesn't sound like a particularly exciting story, but it's so exciting and so interesting and so weird. And it's just about this tech startup in Silicon Valley, led by this woman. And it basically is the story of someone who couldn't accept that their vision was not possible and did enormous quantities of kind of fraud and abuse and whatever to like keep it going at all costs and not have it, not have to kind of acknowledge that this thing that they wanted to do was impossible. And it's such a good book. It's so interesting. I loved it. I loved it. I loved it. And it was sent to me by Grace, who we talked to on the I'll Be Gone in the Dark episode, because she loved it too. And I thought, if Grace loves it and she loves things about interesting true crime that isn't always like super gnarly, then I might like it too.
I feel like Bad Blood is this year's Golden Hill.
Yeah.
Where I know I trust you to the ends of earth, I'd follow you to hell, you know.
Probably hell, yeah.
It's all a given. Probably hell with Krampus. It's all a given. But I just, I'm like, oh, true crime, which one is this? I always forget about it.
And then you're like, oh, yeah. No.
And I fancy it, bro. Yeah. Even though, you know, I'm sure actually I would love it.
I think it's great, but I get why it might not appeal to you. I think that's, yeah, very reasonable. But yeah, that's definitely one of mine. I loved it.
Next on my list is Little Eve by my pal Katrina Ward. Little Eve, we may discuss in a future episode.
Indeed.
I have a theme for it already, locked and loaded. But it's the perfect book to read this time of year. It opens on New Year's Eve. It's about an isolated community. It's got a cult in it. There are snakes. It's pretty disturbing and kind of weird and wild and wonderful. And I absolutely loved it. Cool. I think especially for fans of The Water Cure, if you like that kind of like isolation, kind of patriarchal weirdness, it's just beautiful. It's perfect.
I look forward to coming to this book. So my next one, which is actually my second to last on my list. How many you got left?
Second to last, yeah. I have...
Because I think we've had quite a lot of crossover. I have
three more.
Why don't you do one?
Should I do another one?
Don't do one that you know I'm going to do.
Okay, I'll do one that is definitely not going to be on your list, because yeah. You definitely haven't read it. So, What It Means When a Man Falls from the Sky by Leslie Necker Aramer.
I want to read this book.
Oh, it's so good. So this is a short story collection. I read about minimum 6 collections a year. This is the only one on my list this year. I absolutely loved it. The title story in particular, if you're the kind of person that buys collections and then never bothers to read them, just skip straight to this story. It will be enough to compel you to read the whole collection. The stories themselves are quite varied. Some of them are set very much in the real world. Some of them have a more fantastical aspect to them. What It Means When a Man Falls from the Sky has almost Atwoodian vibe to it. It kind of reminds me of The Handmaid's Tale. In that kind of, scary future.
Yeah.
Scary future kind of way. But there's other stories as well. Like, there's one about this, like, village of women who have to kind of create their own fetishes to represent children. And this one woman makes one out of, like, her own hair, which is kind of grotesque and weird. And, oh, it's just fantastic. I love her. She has an incredible brain.
And everybody I know who I trust has read it and thinks it bangs. So I would be foolish not to.
Why did my brain totally blank when I was trying to think of words to describe The Handmaid's Tale?
Yeah, I thought, I was like, do you mean like plausible dystopia? Is that what you're trying to say?
Well, I kind of did. And then I was like, but it's not, because it's got a fantastical element. And then I got lost in my head because I was thinking like, that's the whole point of The Handmaid's Tale, is it doesn't have that. And I just spaced.
It's cool. It happens. So, one of mine is one that I'm sure will be on your list, which is Lullaby by Leila Slimani, which I just feel like anyone who listens to this podcast will have read it. If you haven't and you like books about horrible things, you cannot do better than Lullaby. It's dark in the way that Skin Deep is dark. It's, yeah, about a nanny who murders the two children that she looks after. It does exactly what you think it's going to do. I think a lot of people read it believing there was going to be some twist. I think people thought it operated more as a thriller than it did. I just think for what it is completely perfect and brilliant. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Agreed.
Further words, any words you'd like to add?
None from me.
Okay, I've done it. Done it all. And guess who we're going to have a drink with next week?
Oh my god, who?
It's Leila Slimani.
Oh, I'm so excited.
I hope it's cool. I hope it's fun. I hope we have a good time.
I can't wait.
Me either.
Okay, the last one on my list is Ponty by Charlene Tao.
Yeah.
So I flagged Ponty at the beginning of the year, at the end of last year, as a book that I was excited about. I've been lucky enough to catch Charlene read from it twice before I read it myself, so I knew that it was going to be good.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that I would fall in love with it, and I did. It's such a wonderful book about disappointment. It's about a mother and daughter, and then the daughter's best friend. So you get like three different timelines, three different stories, and it's just brilliant and wonderful, and I absolutely loved it. And again, I think it's just such a... It's like a classic What Page Pod book. It just has everything that you will like if you like the books that we generally recommend.
I agree. I totally agree. Yeah, I have very fond memories of reading and talking about and celebrating this book. I love it. Charlene is a great gal too.
And the paperback cover is gorgeous.
They've done such a good job covers for Ponty. I think explaining Ponty visually, they've done an amazing job.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. So if you haven't picked that up, I think that's another one that will appeal to almost everybody who listens to this. Loved it. So my final pick is one that you have heard me talk about in some detail with the authors, which is Revolting Prostitutes by Molly Smith and Juno Mack. And we haven't done loads of interviews this year, but that was an interview that I did a few weeks ago. So if you haven't listened to that, then please go back and listen to it. It's straight up nonfiction. It's an extensively researched, amazing nonfiction book about sex work from the point of view mostly of labor rights and immigration and the police and borders. And it is just so good. It is a wonderful book. And I think everyone I know who has read it just wants to go through and highlight everything because it's such an amazing gift because it helps you to be able to articulate and explain the views that you instinctively know you hold about sex work and about borders and racism and legalization and decriminalization, but it helps you explain why you think that and how to explain that to someone else who might not think that. I just think they've done an amazing job. I loved it.
I'm really excited to read it.
I think you're ready.
I haven't managed to get to it in 2018.
You will, you know, but life is long. It's great.
I will get to it. I'm excited. And it sounds like it definitely has resonated a lot as well. Like, you're right, my Twitter feed has just been full of praise. And it feels like a very timely book that's very much needed.
Agree. I just think it's wild that neither of them are academics or authors, that they don't write at great lengths. They're not used to doing this amount of very intimidating research and having to back up every claim they make because so many people are so invested in refuting what sex workers say about what kind of laws they need. It's just such an amazing achievement. And then it turned out so good. Like, it's just so great. I love it. I love it. I love it. Alice, what is your final pick?
That's it.
Oh, we done it?
Yeah.
Cool.
10.
Cool, cool, cool.
We whizzed through that.
We did. I mean, we probably didn't, but it's probably been
a little for 4 hours. While.
We've been going for half an hour, so that's all right. That's not so bad. So I thought we would give a little shout out to some things that people recommended when we asked people to submit things that they'd enjoyed this year. Tell you what, a book that cropped up a lot that I have not read but don't know why I haven't read is Educated by Tara Westover.
That really popped off, didn't it? I think it was a non-fiction book of the month for Waterstones.
So people including the lovely Jasmine EEEC, who I know very well, Louise McCreesh and Nick Blacklaws all mentioned it on twitter.com.
All right, cheers, lads.
I'll read
that next year.
Circe by Madeline Miller got a lot of mentions, including from the lovely Alex Shepherd, who is the author of the forthcoming YA novel Oh My Gods, which is set in ancient Greece.
Awesome.
Yeah, very cool. Blair from Learn This Phrase, who is someone who we sometimes have very overlapping tastes with, but she also reads really different stuff to us a lot of the time. So I'm very interested in what Blair is interested in. Her pick of the year was I Still Dream by J.P. Smythe.
I haven't even heard of that.
Me either. That's what I'm saying. Like, don't get so interesting.
Sly fox.
Blair is a sly old fox. And there were lots of people advocating for Milkman and Washington Black, which were both Booker shortlisted.
Uh-huh.
And Milkman obviously won. So yeah, those are some that were recommended to us by the followers of the pod.
Reader picks.
Yeah, reader picks. So instead of talking about books that are coming out next year that we haven't read and might not enjoy by the time they do come out, Alice and I have, obviously since doing the pod, been increasingly lucky to be sent things that are not out yet. So we have actually read some really good stuff that is out next year. So we're just going to tell you about five that we have read, and at least one of us has read and really liked. So would you like to talk about the two from this list that you have read?
I can't read your beautiful handwriting. Will you tell me the title?
Stone Mothers by Erin Kelly.
Oh, yeah. So Erin Kelly, friend of the pod.
Wonderful friend of the pod.
One of my all-time favourite authors and favourite people. She has a new book coming out in 2019 called Stone Mothers. It's set in partly in an abandoned asylum, but also in the past when the asylum is still being used. It is incredible. Like Skin Deep, I felt that this book was operating just on a different emotional level than your standard thriller. I really urge you all to read it. And it says a lot about the history of mental health and the way that we've treated mental health in the UK. I really enjoyed it.
And I think if you like Barbara Vine, the author, if you've read anything by Barbara Vine and you liked it, you will love Stone Mothers. Because I've read a Barbara Vine book only this year. And when I was reading Stone Mothers, I was like, wow, Erin Kelly must really like Barbara Vine. Because that is a hard thing to pull off. But when something makes you think of Barbara Vine, you know they're operating on a cool level. I know we talk about it all the time, but...
Oh, and then the other one we're excited about is The Doll Factory, which has come up on basically every episode we've done since we came back from our long hiatus. But it's wicked. It's going to bang. It's going to be everywhere. So add it now to your, like, wish lists or whatever you do to keep track of books you're looking forward to.
The Doll Factory by Elizabeth McNeil.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, thank you.
By the time it comes out, it will not need our help at all. But I like that we are on the record as early adopters of what is going
to
be.
I was about to say we're early adopters.
We are. And I'm happy that we are because it is so good.
Our beautiful pottery daughter.
She's so great. What a great lad. So a few books that I have read that Alice has not yet read, which are coming out next year. One is by another friend of the pod, Red Snow by Will Dean. Dark Pines popped off this year.
Dark Pines popped the fuck off this year.
It's wild. It's I'm so happy for him. I'm so happy for Will. But I've read the follow-up, which is called Red Snow. It is so good. It's quite different in lots of ways from Dark Pines. And I love it so much. I love it so much more than I like Dark Pines, which I liked a lot. I just think Red Snow bangs so hard. And if it's going to build in this way throughout the series, I cannot wait to read the next one. Another one which works weirdly well with Stone Mothers is the new Michelle Paver novel, Wakenhurst.
Oh, I'm so excited to read this. And in fact, I was going to mention, my honourable mention was going to be Thin Air, which I only read this year, but came out last year.
Did Thin Air only come out last year?
Thin Air came out in 2017.
because I've come to Michelle Paver very late in life, I didn't know that Thin Air was so recent.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Really recent.
Well, Wakenhurst is her new one, which is out next year. And it's set in Suffolk, which is where Stone Mothers is set. And it's just so cool. It is such a weird book. It's got loads of weird stuff in it. I can't even explain. I loved it. I loved everything about it. She does kind of... her previous two novels are historical ghost stories. This one is not a ghost story. It's just a kind of weird gothic tale. It is amazing. I loved it. You will love it. There is no way you're not going to enjoy this book. I promise.
I'm so jazzed. I can't wait.
And the fifth book of the five that we have read and loved that are coming out in 2018 is My Sister the Serial Killer by Oyinkan Braithwaite, which, interestingly, we talked about in this episode last year as a book to look forward to in 2018. But clearly, either we were misinformed or the publication date was pushed back.
I believe, so it is possible that the publication date on Amazon.co.uk was the American publication date. I'm not sure if it's come out already in America.
It has, because all of my American buddies have read it.
Yeah, so I think it, yeah, they quite often will just...
Okay.
Yeah, fuck that up. I am so jazzed about it, though. It has the most incredible cover.
I love it. The cover is great.
You read it, right?
I just finished it today. The cover is amazing. It's just... they captured it perfectly. It is literally about someone whose sister is a serial killer, and they are drafted in to help clean up after she does it. But it's a satire, and it's kind of about, I don't know, life as a young woman in Nigeria. It's just great, and it's so quick and readable. The chapters are really short. It's really kind of unpredictable. I loved it, and I think people are going to really enjoy this book.
We have talked about Leila Slimani so much, and we didn't mention Adele.
We didn't mention Adele.
Did we?
No, we didn't. Oh. Yeah, I was agreeing with you.
I was like, did I space out again?
No.
No, I'm here.
We both read Adele, which is actually her first novel published in French, but her second... published in English. So if you liked Lullaby, you will like Adele. I think it's quite different, and I think I didn't enjoy it as much as Lullaby, but I just think it's like when you watch Paul Thomas Anderson's Hard Eight and you're like, this is so much better than everybody else's first film. Like, mm-hmm. even if it's not as good as the films he then went on to make, most people would not be getting off to a start that looked like this. And I feel the same about Adele. Like, I think Lullaby is better, but I just think Adele is much better than anything that anybody else could write, even further into their career.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
That's my take. So, yeah, those are some things that we're looking forward to next year.
Do you have any other... I mentioned one of my honourable mentions. I have one other honourable mention, but do you have any honourable mentions?
Like, things that I didn't put in my list, or...
Yeah, like, stuff that wasn't published this year, or for whatever reason didn't fit in your list, but you want to flag as... worthy of discussion.
A little book called Plus by Bethany Rutter. Just kidding. No, I don't know. I feel like I've got to say everything I wanted to say about all the books I wanted to talk about.
Okay, good. I have one more.
Which I also agree with.
Yeah.
I'm very on board with this.
One of my books of the year, which isn't in my list just because it doesn't kind of operate in the same way as the other books that we discussed, but The Green Roasting Tin... which is just, you know, it took over my life for a while. Hashtag Tin Lads. It's by Rukmini Iyer.
Yep.
The premise of the book, it's a cookbook. It's just you stick everything in a tin, stick it all in the oven, and then have a delicious dinner. I just love it. I loved it so much I bought the omnivore version as well, which is not something I would normally bother doing. I cook from them loads, and yeah, favourite cookbook of the year.
And I think about this a lot, how The Green Roasting Tin... it wasn't just a cookbook, it was like a very sweet cultural moment, because I know even people that don't cook or think that they can't cook got it and then were like, oh, it's not that hard. Like, you know, my buddy Danny Vanier, who lives around the corner from me.
Yeah, yeah.
Her housemate, she was telling me, like, her housemate, like, never cooked. And then he got this and then he was like, I'm a cook now. And I was like, yes.
I love that.
And it's so accessible. And I think the omnivore version is good, but the Green Roasting Tin is so amazing because I guess you just have to be so much more creative when you're doing things that aren't just like chicken and then some meat and then some vegetables. Like when it's a whole recipe built around things you can put in the oven that are vegetarian or vegan. It's so cool.
You know what it's like? You remember that kind of cult Anna Jones
recipe? Which I loved. Yeah,
the one pot
pasta,
lemon and kale pasta. It's like a whole book of recipes like that.
Yeah.
Also, they're all like super cheap. They all come together really easily. The ingredients are really easily sourced. Like, I can easily pick stuff up from my local, like, corner shop to make a Tin Lad's dinner.
Also, another thing I think is cool about this book, if it is okay for me to say, I think it is cool when a woman of colour is allowed to write a recipe book that is not about the place that her family is from.
Mm-hmm.
A general interest recipe book. I think that's very rare. And she's done an amazing job, so thank you so much.
All right, cool. That's it for books.
We...
More books.
Alice...
No more reading.
It wasn't we, it was Alice, thought that it might be a nice idea to...
Do you like our little, just top five things of the year? Just, you know, let's just have a little moment. Let's step away from reading.
Let's look back on the years that we've had and list some things that we enjoyed. Kick us off, Alice.
Okay. So... I'm just going to do these in the order that I thought of them.
Yeah, that's
so
fine.
So my first one is a TV show. The Haunting of Hill House ruined my life for about 10 days while me and my husband worked our way through it. It destroyed me. I had nightmares. The final episode, we sat side by side and I was sobbing so hard. Alex was like, do we need to pause it?
Fuck.
Yeah, and I was like, no, I'm fine. It's just really hurts a lot. So yeah, that's my number one.
That's a good number one. I loved it as well. I thought
you watched it as well, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't love it as much as you did, but I really enjoyed it.
But I'm a horror gal, and I.
Yeah, it's true. My number one is seeing the other love of my life, not my husband, my other husband, David Byrne, live at the O2, which was, yeah, literally apart from my wedding day, was my favourite day of the year.
When you were like, the other love of my life, not my husband, I was like, Beth?
Okay, fine, the third love of my life. David Byrne of the popular beat combo Talking Heads, his show at the O2, which is not a venue I particularly enjoy being in because it's so big and disgusting, but he like lit it up. Like, he's amazing. I love him. I love everything he does. I think he is an amazing person, one of the most creative people living today. I can't believe he is still so cool when he is so old and he is a white man. Like, I think he's amazing. And that show was unreal and it made me so happy. What's your number two?
My number two is also music related. It's the album Dirty Computer by Janelle Monáe.
And very apt because David Byrne finishes that tour, like every night of the tour he finishes it with a Janelle Monáe song.
No way.
He does.
Ah.
The one, like say her name.
Yeah.
Say her name. Yeah, that one.
Ah. Yeah. That's nice. I was lucky enough to see Janelle Monáe this year. She banged. It was amazing. It's one of the best gigs I've ever been to. It wasn't in the disgusting O2, it was in the beautiful Roundhouse, which is one of my favourite venues.
Yeah.
And it was, yeah, this album was the soundtrack of my summer. I absolutely loved it. Do you remember when Childish Gambino's song
This is America
came out, and then that white woman, that comedian, did like a feminism version?
Maybe, yeah. I don't remember it, but garbage. Yeah.
It like had a minute where everyone was like, what the fuck are you doing? And obviously none of us watched it, we all forgot about it immediately. But what really struck me is I was like, we already have a feminist version of this song. It's called Dirty Computer by Janelle Monáe. The whole album.
She's amazing. I get why, like, David Byrne loves her so much, because I feel like, you know, just those people that are like complete creative forces.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't just excel in like this one area. There is just something about them that is like sparklingly like creative. And I get why they conceptually would work well together. So my number two is a podcast, which is not What Page Are You On. It is called Dr. Death.
Ah.
I have never enjoyed a podcast as much as Dr. Death. I think it is a perfect podcast. I mean, obviously it's about something incredibly gnarly, which is a recent story of a neurosurgeon in Texas who, it appears, is has been deliberately maiming his patients during surgery.
Jesus wept.
Yeah, so it's a very horrible story. And, you know, there is gnarly content in it, but I'm very sensitive and I could handle what they were discussing. But just the way that the podcast works, the storytelling in it is so perfect. Because I listened to it just after... people had been, you know, kind of talking about the podcast Teacher's Pet, which was another true crime podcast. Weirdly, which has kind of been resolved today, where the...
Is that the one that... Yeah.
So the guy that Teacher's Pet is about was arrested today in connection with his wife's murder. But when you listen to Teacher's Pet, you're listening to the same stories getting retold over and over again, and people basically saying the same thing, and it's not focused in any way. The episodes are way too long. The story's not interesting enough to justify that many episodes. They don't have access to people who would have made the story interesting. Like, all of this stuff. And then I listened to Dr. Death and I was like, this is perfect. They talk to exactly the right people. They disclose information at exactly the right pace. They never retread old ground. Like, it's so good. So if you like slightly horrible podcasts about horrible stories, Dr. Death is as good as it gets. Number three.
So I'm actually going to also... do a little pod shout out. I actually have two podcasts. I couldn't decide between them.
I see how it is.
Two Girls, One Ghost, which is two girls who chat about ghosts. I love it. Each episode is kind of themed. It's in the same kind of format as My Favourite Murder. So they each research a ghost story related to their theme and then they discuss them. But I love it, it bangs. And then also our pals Teenage Scream.
Yeah, good eggs.
Yeah. It's a point horror podcast by Kirsty Logan and Heather Parry. It's so good. They're so funny. I love it. I listen to every episode. The next episode, which I haven't listened to yet, is about the cheerleader, and I am so jazzed.
That's a classic.
Yeah. So yeah, that's my number three.
My number three is a film. It's not my favourite film of the year, but it was my favourite film moment of the year, which was A Star Is Born. Loved it. I loved it. I went to see it twice in the space of like 4 days. I just loved it. I loved every minute of it. I think it is so wonderful. And I just love the way that it gave us so much in terms of like memes and content, discourse. It was just a great moment. I loved it. I love Lady Gaga. She has always been one of my like fave female solo artists. I'm happy that she is getting this second go. Bradley Cooper is
second go.
You know, just like, I feel like her star did kind of fall musically. Like, she her more recent stuff hasn't been received. Okay. And I feel like if this is going to give her another push at, like, stardom, I'm very happy for her. Bradley Cooper is not someone I've ever really thought about. And so for him to have nailed this in one go is just so amazing, and I just loved it. I loved it. It was so fun.
I haven't seen it.
You know, maybe it's not your, you know, you might not love it. You might, I don't know. I cannot confirm or deny whether you will enjoy this film, but I loved it, and it has some bangers.
I like that our friendship comes with disclaimers like that.
Yeah. Who knows?
She's not going to go on record either way.
Yeah. I'm going to flip flop.
My number four is something that took over my life this summer. It's Love Island.
I knew it was going to be Love Island.
I never watched it before. I never joined in the water cooler Love Island chat. I did not know what I was missing. This year, for some reason,
we all got really into it.
Yeah, I was in like a group chat. I bought a volume of poetry based on Love Island at your husband's fire festival.
It was a zine fair, but he kept calling it Fire Fest in homage to the terrible... what was it? Like a music festival in the Caribbean?
It was a bougie music festival that you had to pay thousands of dollars to attend, and it was just an absolute car crash, and we all enjoyed watching it.
So when my husband set up a zine arts books fair in a kind of warehouse in Tottenham a couple of weeks ago, he decided that that would be an appropriate thing to kind of parallel it with. But yeah, you bought this volume of poetry.
Anyways, I bought volume poetry, and it just reminded me all over again how much fun Love Island was this year.
I do not resist Love Island in any way. It's just that I do so much stuff that I literally cannot commit to being in every night for like 10 years or
however long. Yeah, I don't watch it live, unfortunately.
But then if you don't watch it live, like when do you watch, like how do you participate in the cultural discourse around Love Island if you don't watch it live?
In the group chat. So basically, like, it's very difficult. It is very difficult to catch a TV show at the same time every day, 6 days a week. Like, that's not possible for me. But, you know, if I have an evening in, I'll catch up with two or three episodes.
And you don't feel like if you didn't watch them at the time, there's no point watching
Honestly,
them.
Mate, so much happens. Like, so much was happening. And there were so many, like, obviously, I would try and keep up. I would try and watch it as close to live as possible. Mainly to avoid spoilers rather than wanting to, like, join in with the discourse. But yeah, man, that's what group chats are for. You just be like, who's watched yesterday's episode yet? No one. Okay, cool. Tell me when you do.
Okay, maybe next year I'll give it a go. But that's literally the only reason why I never watched Love Island, was I felt like...
No, it's fine. It's not that difficult, you know, it's not that deep.
Okay.
You can skip an episode and you will know what's happening because everyone will be talking about it.
Okay, fine. Maybe next year's the year.
Also, in terms of Love Island, I just remembered, Sophie McIntosh wrote a really great article, which was published in The New Yorker?
It was the Modern Love column.
Yeah. About her experience of Love Island this summer. And it's a really great article, I recommend you read it.
Do you know, it was on my radar as something I knew I would enjoy reading, even if I hadn't watched Love Island, but I didn't actually get around to reading it. I will read it. My number four is something that we briefly mentioned earlier, but not the same thing. It is the musical of Fun Home.
Oh, fuck. I really wanted to see it.
It was so good. Like, I was looking back on what I've been to see at the theatre this year, and it just really leapt out as something that was so wonderful and memorable. Like, I feel like it's so rare to see a musical where you remember the songs after you leave, when you didn't know the songs.
Never
when you
have it in my life.
Yeah.
And I hate show tunes.
Yeah, and it feels like the musicals that get put on the West End are either jukebox musicals with music that everybody already knows and that's where they go, or it's like old classic musicals. Whereas this was kind of new and hadn't been put on in London before, and the music banged, the cast was incredible, the way that they adapted the book was like flawless. I just loved it.
I just can't. The reason why I really wanted to see it, even though I don't really love the theatre and I don't go very often, I just cannot imagine
Fun Island.
Imagine Fun Home and Love Island, that collab.
Yeah.
Anyway, Fun Home, which is a coming-of-age queer story about a girl whose father runs a funeral home. I cannot imagine that as a musical.
Yeah.
I know music can have, like, lots of different vibes and moods, of course, but, like, when I think of musicals, I do think of, you know...
Les Mis.
Yeah.
It's very much not that. And the songs in it are so great and really appropriate to, like, the moments in the book.
I just want to see it. I sobbed reading that book.
Yeah, and I found the
beautiful.
The musical is very moving as well. They did an amazing job. What is your final pick of things of the year?
So my final one, I was really trying to think of, like, what internet thing I've enjoyed the most. And honestly, I think it's Knickers, the massive fucking cow.
Which is a relatively new moment.
It's new. Maybe that's why it's still so fresh in my head. But when I look at that cow...
Can you explain the cow to people listening at home?
I feel like if I need to explain the cow, you're not online enough to be listening to this podcast. But I will humour anyone who is not aware of Knickers. Knickers is this massive steer in Australia who was too big to be killed. He is an absolute unit. He's a beefy boy.
And he's just like... the pictures of Knickers in a herd with normal-sized cows, it's bizarre.
Oh,
like, it is
so
weird.
Beautiful. I just love him.
Knickers is a beautiful thing.
What's your number five?
My final thing was... It was, you know, it was the wild summer. It was Love Island, and there was football coming home, there was the heat wave, and among all that, it was the perfect summer in which for me to go to Hampstead Ponds for the first time. So my fifth thing is the Ladies' Ponds, which is a place that we went together.
Aww,
it just felt like... This was the summer that even people who had never been before went.
You're right, it was the summer of the Ladies' Pond.
Because the heatwave never ended. It wasn't like you felt like, oh, it's a hot day, and if I don't go today, I'll never go. Like, you knew that you could plan it, and it would be reasonable to expect that the pond would be wonderful.
I enjoyed the pond so much that I considered that if we have a heatwave this summer, the summer of 2019, I will book a day off so we can go midweek again.
Yeah.
Well, on a Friday afternoon.
It was so
good.
It
was busy, but it was nice.
It was so nice. So yeah, Those are my things of the year.
What a great year.
What a year it's been. And thank you so much for joining us for the ride. I can't, like, this is the first full year that we have podcasted, because we only started, like, last September. Yeah. So this is a real...
I mean, we missed quite a big chunk of the year, but fuck it.
Yeah, we do what we want. We have lives. I mean, another thing that would be, like, number six on both of our lists would be getting married, I guess.
I know. When you said, before we start recording this, I said, like, what have you got? You know, I've got a couple of podcasts, and Bethany said she had a life moment, and I was like, if that fucking normie has her wedding...
Absolutely not. It was the Ponds. That was the life moment. Mutual number six, wedding.
All right, friend. Should we go to the pub?
Let's go pub. Let's go pub. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you so much.
See you in 2019.
I can't wait.
When my book is out. Bye.